pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Don't forget the flag. Oh, okay.
Tim, I've got a meeting set 10:15, so we're not complete, and I'll excuse myself and take care of that. Sorry, Skip. So you don't think I just got mad and left?
You're permitted.
Okay, well, so you just don't think I got mad and left? Like Greg does.
Yeah. You're talking about Wilkins, right?
Go ahead, motion to approve the minutes, please.
So move.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes. Agenda items. Capital improvement. Mr. Wilkins. Be nice picture. Why's your picture in front of all these?
You don't see it on there. Don't start now. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Today, I'd like to present the 2009 Capital Improvement Report from Butler County Engineers Office. We'll go through it a little in synopsis. I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on detail. But if you open it up, you go to the page right past the letter. It says bridges. See, that's the start of it. We're doing 5 bridges this year, $2.6 million. Many of them funded with leverage through OPWC funds. First one you see there is Bauer Road in Milford Township. You turn the page, you see Somerville Road. That's again in Milford. That we have already taken out the bid. It's not been awarded. Parent low bidder is Broomball Construction at $474,000. Next page is Howard Road. Howard's located, for your information, right down on the Hamilton County line, down in Morgan Township. Again, that project has been out to bid, and at the apparent low bidder is W.G. Stang at $215,000. And the reason a lot of these are out to bid, what we find out is we take them out early in the season and we'll get better bids. Everyone's likes to get their work lined up and get so that the bids come in a little cheaper. Turning the page, you see that's a Black Road Bridge down in Ross Township. It is not out for bid, but we have an estimate of about $1 million for that structure. It's got some road work on it. Turning the page here, you see the River Road Bridge down there by the Bolton plant, if you're familiar with that area. That has been out to bid. Bid at $548,000. We're doing that in conjunction with Fairfield. You talk about regional cooperation. This is one of the projects we do pretty regularly. Matter of fact, a couple things. There's a sharing in funding with the City of Fairfield on this, plus the fact that Fairfield is going to relocate part of River Road while we got this area shut down for this bridge. They're moving the roadway away from the river where they've had that problem, so as not to inconvenience the traveling public in two times. Turn the page, you see our culverts. All right, see, there's 26 culverts there, about $243,000. Yeah, if you look the next page, you see a lot of these culverts are still WPA stuff that's around that we'll be replacing. We do our culvert replacement in conjunction with looking at our resurfacing program to make sure we're not resurfacing and then digging up culverts after it's resurfaced. We're out about a year to 2 years ahead and all we're resurfacing and replacing the culverts. Turn the page, you'll see intersection improvements. We're completing 4 intersections this year, about $2.6 million. First one you see there is Boozenbark, the intersection of Boozenbark, Riverside, and Trenton Road. We have determined just recently we would probably not build this project this year and postpone it till next year. If I'm sure you're well aware of it, Edgewood School District has just passed their bond levy for their new school to be located at this intersection. That's going to require road work for the move the traffic in and out of school. We're in joint cooperation with the Edgewood School District and making the improvements they need, plus this project at the same time. Turning the page, you'll see an aerial shot. What that is, the extension of Civic Center Boulevard down to Windish Road and Allen Road intersection. That'll provide, that's done privately. Duke Development's doing that in conjunction with a TIF out of Westchester. To run that will tie Windish and Allen to Union Center Boulevard. At the bottom, you see the Cal Station, a little improvement we're going to do for with Liberty Township Cal Station at Butler Ward Road. Turn the page, you'll see roadway improvements. We've got 5 roadway improvements this year at $5.1 million. First one being Bisinger Road. This just recently, it has had some history of accidents. That's how most of our capital improvement projects are picked up. We do a pretty in-depth analysis statistically on accidents, and that's what slates the improvement project for the most part. And this one has just had a rash of accidents again here in the last month. So we later this summer, we will straighten those curves out and improve that roadway. Down below, you see right there, just in line, is the Amblin turn lane. That's in conjunction, you remember, with the Department of Development that we're going to build here on Port Union Road. That's about a $300,000 project, of which the engineer's office is a fund of half of it. Turning the page again, you see the Smith Road project, Smith Road and Beckett. For Beckett Road, Smith to a Union Center. It's along the toe of the slope of Beckett Ridge up through there. We're straightening out that little curve in there. There'll be a bike path that goes along there. This again is in conjunction with Westchester. We work hand in hand with Westchester with a lot of their TIF funds to make these improvements, and it benefits the whole area, that whole area down there. This project, matter of fact, you're gonna award that later today to Senesis Construction at $1.3 million. Down below there, you're gonna see, we're doing also Union Center Boulevard. We're adding an additional lane on Union Center Boulevard from Mulhauser to Westchester Road. That again is funded with the help of Westchester and from TIF funding. Additional road and roadway improvements on Cincinnati-Dayton Road for the advent of the new GE, for GE's relocating down there. So we're gonna make that a 3- and 4-lane section down there. And that's gonna be funded with private money out of that development. Turn the page, you see paving. We're looking at 17.5 miles of resurfacing this year, to the tune of about $1.5 million. But this does not include the stimulus money. We're fortunate enough to get $2.3 million in stimulus money on top of this, that we plan to resurface an additional 7.1 miles, which is the majority of Tylersville Road from Cox Road to Bypass 4. We're going to resurface the whole road and additional to River Road, much as like where the bridge was I just mentioned earlier, down by the Bolton plant. We're going to resurface that in conjunction with Fairfield's going to resurface their portion of that. Going down, you get some of our under other guardrail installation, $300,000, which was a grant. We're going to do that in various locations throughout the county. Sidewalk installation, that's on Dutchland Wood near the Liberty School. This is a safe school route that we worked with. It's a federal grant for sidewalks out of to get kids to be able to walk to school. We have bid that already. Apparent low bidder again is W.G. Stang, about $36,900. The other runs that are ready to be slated for bidding is with the block grants, catch basins in Sharon Park. We look at $39,000 and some ditching in College Corner and some other work up in that area. Turn the page. You've seen some ongoing problems that are starting to get worse that are really starting to concern us now. You see some slips. We got Indian Creek along Millville Riley Road that we're going to have to correct. It's slowly moving into the roadway, and we feel it's ample time to get that done now. We've secured some OPWC loan money at 0% to do this work. We estimated $807,000. We just recently hit a a little hiccup in the deal is the Indiana bat is we got to have it clear by April 15th. The problem was April 15th is approaching quickly. We're going to have to put up netting. If we catch any bats in the netting that we'd put up, then we're going to have to put a radio frequency on them, find out where they are hibernating, and have to trace that down, and then we're open to fish and wildlife, whatever they want to do from here on out. So that's...
There's a lot of people shaking their heads right now.
Well, you know what? That's just the start of it. I do hear you, and I bring that up just to make knowledge of some of the things. If you're getting this... Used to be all defined if you're in federal money, you were in all this. Now it's down to the point that even if you're pretty much starting to get its head into local money, that you're still in a lot of these rules and regulations with fish and wildlife and other things. And it's unbelievable if you're particularly in the federal process, the hoops that you're jumping through to get these funds. But the reality of it, on bigger projects, we have no other source of funding of that magnitude to not go after those funds. So you just got to play the game.
Don't have to worry about running buffalo clover?
Yeah. Like that. Oh, that's all part of it. Yeah. The other one, you see another slip we've got here. It's along Hamilton Eaton Road, 7 Mile Creek. It's north of Collinsville up there. And we're not running into the same problem there, but that is a 0% loan we've got. It's about $290,000. Continuing on, you see the restriping. We got our annual restriping. Our annual RPMs, that if you turn the page here, you see a picture of the RPMs. Bottom of that, you see installation of UPS battery backup for traffic signals. The windstorm created havoc with us in reference to signals going down through that time. We had just a few of our signal installations, particularly in the Westchester area, that were battery backup. We have now set out a program to get all of our signals battery backed up in about 3 years, and this is the first phase that added about $400,000. If you turn the page, you just see that's a summary of where we're at. We've got about $14.3 million, which is 3.2 of it are going to be in grants, which we are leveraging about a 4-to-1 on our whole construction program on leveraged money. So we work diligently, my staff works diligently at finding grants, and I think that's the key to our success. To give you a quick review, as you look backwards a little bit, some of the bigger projects we had going last year, the Liberty Fairfield Road is still under construction, the bridge over to Great Miami. It's slated, still on track to be finished in September. We're hoping maybe a little earlier. You'll see if you go out there next couple weeks, they'll be set in the second half of the beams. If you've been out there, half the bridge is construction with a deck on it. Coming back to set the other half of the beams here around April 1, and they'll be putting a deck on, and you see that project moving quite quickly at that point. The other thing, if you do recall, we installed for the first time two roundabouts in the county last year. One down at Lakota West Drive and Eagle Ridge, and the other one at Liberty Fairfield Hamilton Mason. We find they are working well, the people are getting educated, and we're fortunate enough to get an award for the one at Liberty Fairfield Road last week from the American Society of Highway Engineers for that project. The other thing, though, as I look forward, I do see concerns. Last year, in a four-month period, we've seen asphalt raise 30%. We've seen pipe raise 20%. These are all in a four-month period. This ain't a year. This is 4 months. We've seen curb and that go up 25%. And our revenues are flat. And that's not just to speak of the economic situation we're in. If we were in good times, our revenues are flat. So as I look out here, I get very much concerned. The necessity to get grant money and to get this match and the TIF funds right now are probably 50% of our capital improvement budget. And that I may slow down, but that is the essence of us keeping up with the growth in our high growth areas, quite honestly. That is really. Without them, we're going to be forced into more of a maintenance program, quite honestly, which would very much concern me in this county with the tremendous growth that we've had. And I do see, and I'm not here crying for funds, I'm just raising a concern I think we all see that in the future. Our revenues are based on license plate fees and gasoline tax. Gasoline tax, it's a no-brainer. Cars are becoming, the hybrids, everything else, there'd be less fuel used. If we don't set a different revenue source, our funds are, that funding's gonna drop off. The license plate fees, I think, reality, I think, anticipate this year, we're gonna see some drop in that. Just, I think, the nature of the beast, the nature of the economy, people aren't gonna be licensed vehicles. Not devastating, I don't think I'm gonna be back here crying, I'm not gonna make it next year. But I think long range, anybody in transportation is concerned. The feds are looking at this, they're looking at other sources, they know the handwriting's on the wall. The way we funded in the past is not making it. Is not making it the need. Not from the infrastructure, as it's deteriorating, as well as in our county, we've got the growth situation. But the good thing in our county, the TIFs are very, very helpful in reference to keeping up with the growth and meeting the demands. Without them, as I said before, I'd be very much concerned. I answer any questions you may have.
I don't have any questions, if I may, Mr. President. You've always done such a tremendous job in the past, Greg, with leveraging money, but apparently that's going to be more of a problem from the way you're describing it.
I don't know if it's going to be more. I'm concerned. We're going to, you know, much as we talk about all the federal hoops you got to jump through, we've got to go after that federal money. And quite honestly, there's only, you know, in the County Engineers Association, there's 88 counties out there, and not everyone goes after that money, quite honestly, because they're not equipped and they don't have the. I'm not trying to say that we're better, but they just don't want to deal with all the hassles that you got to go through to get it. In our case, I don't see any way that we cannot go after it. As I said, our bigger project, there's no way that we could begin to build those projects without federal funds. For the example, the bridge over the Great Miami, $10.5 million job, we are going to have about $260,000 of local money in it. Yeah. I mean, that's federal money. We went after about three sources to make that happen. But that's a success, and we got to continue to do that, and we know that.
Another issue also, you guys did a tremendous job with the snow and ice this winter. That was a bad one, and your road crew did an outstanding job. They were always on top of it. So.
Well, thank you, because I'm very proud. We've got a lot of hard-working, dedicated people with that.
We've got a lot of compliments around the county as we travel around the job you did.
Thanks, Chuck.
Greg, I just want to say that I had the opportunity to be at your meeting with the Township Trustees Association, and very impressed when you talk about regionalization. I think you're the poster child for that effort, because you do combine salt purchasing and asphalt purchasing. Is there any other areas? I know you talked to those two that night.
We work jointly with ODOT, we share equipment. We work hard at that. My operations deputy works diligently with the state. Matter of fact, kind of honestly, the Black Street Bridge, Columbia, or this used to be our responsibility, High Street Bridge, up until just recently. And you'd always get the log jams up against them piers and stuff. That, just cite an example, we didn't have a crane, we had no way of getting down here, but ODOT had a crane, and they also had an old operator. That wasn't their responsibility. But we'd share equipment. They'd bring the crane down. We'd supply the crew and get the log jam off of it. And there's no switching of funds. It's just that we mutually work with one another. We work with the townships. We do force account that Kyle Station Road at Butler Warren is a township project that our forces go out and help them. We work hand in hand. The salt purchases. We saved a tremendous amount of money last year, about an early bid for everybody. That was jointly with the cities. That was all the cities, with the exception, I think, of Monroe and Trenton, that were in on our contract. And we did that again this year. We just recently purchased that. And we saved money in that in a couple ways, quite honestly. They could go out and get on a state bid and do that. But the reality on the state bid, and here's a little bit of the difference in that, is a big part of that salt is transportation. How do you get it delivered and where it comes in at? When you go on a bigger contract, they got to take in, the farthest shipping point they're at. We're set up to hold to contain that into Butler County, so we can set, and all that salt comes off the river. You go up farther north, if you get in a big contract, the state's contract, get up, they'll be coming down off of Lake Erie in a different transportation. They got to figure the transportation rate, bid that by the ton to their longest point. Where we narrow that point down and end up getting a little bit better bid. So paving, we let all the, that hasn't reflected in here. We let all the townships paving contracts with that, and we administrate all them and work jointly with them. We've shared with Kyle Station and last year, Kyle Station 747 was a state highway. Liberty Township, through our office, we designed it. We got it designed, built, worked with ODOT, and Liberty Township funded through a RIT. I mean, these are things that just occur pretty naturally. I mean, Edgewood School, we did this with Liberty, with Lakota School District. We had three projects for them last year. We let, in conjunction with agreements to them, that they were funding for their schools. But they said, you know what, you're the road expert, you know what you need, you let the contract and we'll get a share. We had some culverts in there that we knew were our responsibility to replace. We broke them out of the contract. We said, we pay them, you pay the rest of this. So we continually work at that. And because, you know, I've had the philosophies of being in office that, you know, it's all the taxpayers' dollars. I don't care if it's going to the school or where it's going. It's taxpayers' dollars. And if we can work more effectively, that's where we want to be.
Well, thank you.
Greg, I concur with my colleague's remarks. And I just to sum it up, when you're a person who's pretty much a person who's in the upper administration, OKI, summed it up and said that the reason Butler County gets so much money, so much grant money, is simply because they got the best of the best making the applications. I think that pretty well sums up you and your department. You've done an outstanding job and continue to get our share. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Once again, we're gonna get David out of the way. He's got a plat. He's looks like he wants to get back to work, and it's killing me to see him sitting there and we're paying him.
I just have one item this morning. It's for Cloverdale subdivision. It's located in Fairfield Township. It's a replat of two lots. The owner's taking two lots and combining them into one.
Move to approve.
Second. Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Commissioner Dixon?
Yes.
Next up, we have Jeff. Jeff, want to get ready? He's going to give us a report on 208 Workforce Investment Board.
Uh-huh. Well, good morning. Thank you, commissioners, for the opportunity to give you an update on Workforce One Investment Board and the regional workforce system. We have had a extremely busy year. I think probably the hot topic in most communities right now are jobs and the economy, unemployment. Just passed out a map of Ohio, which is just a couple days old. It updates the current unemployment rates. As you see, we're up over 9% now in Butler County. Claremont County and Warren County are our other two counties in our workforce region, and they have increased again over January. The thing that you see on that map is that we're kind of in the middle as compared to the rest of the state. Many counties are in double digits, some up to 16%. So we're fortunate in some respects, but this is the biggest challenge that we've seen in the years that I've been involved in it, the years that we've been in this regional workforce system. You should have received earlier a copy of our annual report for 2008. I want to just touch on a couple of items, highlight a couple of items from 2008, and then Dan Sack, who is our on our board and chairs our business and economic advocacy team, is going to just give you a couple of key focuses that we're going to zero in on for 2009. And then also in the audience today is our one-stop director for Butler County, Vicki Fran. So we'll all be happy to entertain any questions that you might have regarding the workforce system. In 2008, we have, and some of the things that Greg Wilkins that really struck me about the way that we deal in a regional basis now, more so than ever, there are things that have happened in our region, maybe not necessarily in Butler County, but they've impacted our region and Butler County from the standpoint of the auto industry closures in Batavia, Moraine with GM, things like DHL closure up in Wilmington. Even though those operations aren't directly in our county, they do impact people who live in our counties, work at those facilities, and also the supply chain that supplies those facilities. When you go out, I think it's really been eye-opening to a lot of people to drive through some of these light industrial parks around our communities and understand how many of those operations are somehow tied into the auto industry. So there's definitely a ripple effect that we've had to deal with. One thing that we with our board being, you know, majority of people from the private sector business, we obviously look at our charge and commitment to you and the commissioners in the other counties to invest our funds that we have in the wisest way for the best return on our investments to the taxpayers. And so our business people really scrutinize our operations. We don't have much money for marketing or outreach, and so we're actually the only workforce area in the state that has its own TV show, and we have used that through the cable systems to provide information on what our services are for employers and job seekers, and to bring in different guests from the workforce system, both at the state and local levels, different employers, talk about all kinds of aspects to give our customers, our taxpayers, an opportunity to understand what services are out there and better utilize our one-stop system. We have every year made the most of our resources for our Ohio Workforce Services Month, which is every year in September. Last year we were focused on green manufacturing, green jobs. We brought in the governor's head of energy and the green manufacturing and had a workforce forum for business and educators. Also took a site visit over to Claremont County to a company called Malink, which is one of the foremost leaders in the green applications to businesses. And when we talk about green, I think people have different views of what that means, whether it's a windmill farm or whatever. But the fact of the matter is, and in this stimulus, there's a lot of focus on green, and that really could apply to virtually any business, could apply to the way you operate this building. There's a lot of environmental technologies and things that can be adapted that really move people in a new direction that ultimately saves energy, saves costs to the businesses. And then one thing that we're particularly excited about that we wanted to get done in 2009, and with your support and the support of the other counties, we were able to purchase and implement a new customer tracking and data management service called G-STARS, and that is now in the process of being installed in our three one-stops. It will it's a swipe card technology. It will allow our system to better collect data and individual training data on our customers. It provides business service data, including employer outreach. We have a better understanding of what our customer needs are. One thing that we find that we are charged with increasingly is to provide more and more information to both the state Ohio Department of Job and Family Services and the Federal Department of Labor. And again, this is this goes back to that's where largely our funding comes from, is the Federal Department of Labor. So they want more information all the time. This G-STARS system will allow us to capture real-time information. It's very transparent, and it does not require people being pulled off their regular job of serving customers to manually compile this data. The other thing that is key to this is that the city of Cincinnati, Hamilton County, and the counties in northern Kentucky now are going to that same system. So essentially, we will have a very broad regional mechanism for collecting data and comparing apples to apples, which is something that heretofore we really haven't had. So again, thank you for that support. And Dan, I would like Dan.
Jeff, will the state be buying all those for the one stops, the G-STARS, for the whole state? Or?
Well, actually, over the last couple of years, the state has kind of toyed with that idea. It's always been attached to whether they had the funds or not, and they had told us that they would, and so many counties basically didn't purchase it, thinking that the state would put in a statewide tracking system, and that continues to not happen. So what we've got as an agreement with the state is that if that were to happen someday down the road, then counties like ours that have made that purchase and put that money out would be credited back for their subscription. So we're held harmless in that if that ever were to happen. Hopefully it will happen someday, because it would be would certainly put Ohio at an advantage to have one statewide tracking system. Okay, so Dan, give you a couple of highlights on the year to come.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning, Dan.
This is the third of our commission circuit. My wife, Frances, is with me today. I think I
wondered why you put her in the back row, though.
Well, I had trouble convincing her that Jeff and I were really making presentations all week. But it's too wet to play golf, so she sees that I'm truly working. I'm chair of the Business Economic Development Advocacy Team. We call it BDAT because it's too many words to say. So we are the largest team of the WIB, and have as our mission to promote communication, synergy, and collaboration among the three one-stops. And I think you'd be really proud of that if you had a chance to come to one of our meetings and to see the give and take of information. We changed our focus last year to not only just working within the one-stops, but working hand in glove with the economic development folks in all three counties. You have the annual report for 2008, so I won't dwell on that, but my charge is to look ahead to 2009. We have asked an organization, Real Workforce Solutions Incorporated, an industry consulting firm from Austin, Texas, to review the overall operation of the board and the regional one-stop system. And so they're looking at us at all three of the one-stops and the way the board works. And we're exploring ways to increase efficiencies both at the board level and within the one-stop operations. They looked at our structure and our processes, and they're preparing recommendations. So we should know a little bit later on this year how we can be as efficient as possible. The board will continue to focus on coordinating with economic development and the educators in the area to refine strategies on demand occupations and priority of services for customers. So we want to match the people with the job demand out there. We're currently examining software developed by EMSI, and that stands for Economic Modeling Specialists Incorporated, that will allow for better workforce and economic development planning, strategic planning in this particular case, and thus add value to regional operations. This is one of those synergies that's being spearheaded by Andy Kukta of the Claremont County, and he's working that through and giving us information on how all three counties would benefit from having that that software in place. Well, regardless of how you feel about it, stimulus funding is coming under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and it's getting a lot of attention in our one-stops, as you can imagine. We've personally discussed with our congressional representatives from Southwest Ohio how these funds can have the greatest positive impact on our communities. Both political parties seem to be would like to invest the money wisely in serving our communities. Our one-stops were asked in February to begin planning for youth employment programs. Youth employment and the youth activities are a major part of the stimulus. It's set aside as a separate category. So they're also gearing up for the arrival of the stimulus funds, which are to be spent by formula in each county, much like our WIA funds, okay? So that's a snapshot of what we see coming in 2009. As a board member, we'd like to recognize the fine effort put forth by Vicki France and Don Kell and Jerome Kearns in your county, in our county, and their whole team at the Butler County One Stop. They do an outstanding work for the residents of the county. We'd also like to recognize Commissioner Jolivet for his involvement with workforce issues in Butler County. So we're standing by if you have any questions.
Well, thank you, Dan. I want to thank you and Jeff and the staff for Butler County's for your participation on behalf of Butler County. And I also want to say just a word about our chairman, John Nelson, who I think is very dynamic and very passionate about workforce development. And he's been a great leader to keep us driving forward. I know Absolutely. He lights a fire under Jeff to get him going. So not that he needs that. But
no.
I think the whole board is very involved in workforce development, especially these times when it's so important. And I'd like to thank the commissioners from Claremont County, Bob, and Warren County, Pat South, who serve on the board with us. It's a very challenging year ahead with unemployment numbers going up, and Vicki and the work one stop. I imagine the doors are swinging back and forth these days, and we need to make sure that we have the services available for them, so that we can, find them a job or retrain them to be ready for the next wave of jobs that are coming that may be different than the old traditional jobs that we've known before.
Absolutely.
So it's thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Jeff, good to see you guys.
Thank you.
Fran, did you guys want to add anything? They put you in the back. I don't know if you wanted to.
I'm really going to be quiet.
Okay. Yeah. Good to see you guys.
I think we're going to have Utah upstairs.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we'll have commissioner training upstairs.
Do you want to go and check the audience first before we?
Good.
Do you mind?
No. What's that?
You go ahead and take the audience
first. Oh, sure.
You did nod to me, correct?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Sorry. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Carla Britton. I was raised in Liberty Township from the age of 4 weeks. And I still reside there today. I was raised Republican. My dad and his father before him, both Republicans. My four brothers and sister all Republicans. I am a registered Republican. However, this does not mean that I or anyone in my family does or would agree with the new placement and adoption policy at Children's Services. Mr. Fox has suggested in the paper that Republicans and he are in agreement. I have 479 signatures, and I have 7 pages still out that I was unable to collect before I arrived here today. That suggests that it'll show you that Democrats and Republicans alike are outraged at this policy, as I'm sure some of you guys are as well. I have a couple of letters that I have been presented, and I feel I probably should go ahead and share those. I came with first just my own statement, but this morning I was handed a couple of items. This is Shelley and her 3 sons, Cameron, Carson, and Cole. She's a single parent. She adopted as a single parent. She presented me with a letter this morning I would like to share with you. I am a single mother of 19-month-old triplet boys that I fostered and then adopted through Hamilton County. I am appalled, to say the least, with this policy that has been implemented in Butler County. As a single woman, I made a conscious decision to become a licensed foster parent in 2006 because I had the time, the love, and the financial stability to help a child or children in need. I had no one other than myself to care for, and I was ready to give all of me to a child that was born into a not-so-great situation. My marital status had nothing to do with my ability to be a great mother. As a matter of fact, not having a husband has allowed me to give my sons more of my time. I am extremely fortunate to have a large support group of family and friends that have been there for us every step of the way. The boys are thriving, extremely happy, and very social. And most importantly, they got to stay together. They still have each other. Spirituality is probably not a topic I should be bringing up, but there is no doubt in my mind that God takes care of all unfortunate children that are born into such dramatic predicaments. It is not our place to discriminate or exclude any person or couple, regardless of their sexuality or marital status, that has the ability, desire, and love to give these children. We must remember what most of these children are coming from: abuse, drugs, domestic violence, homelessness, and some not even having known where their next meal would come from. All these children need is love, stability, and a commitment from any person or couple that is willing and capable to give it. Please let me be your proof that this policy is unreasonable and unnecessary. I am a single woman that willingly and unselfishly took 3-week-old triplets into my home to love, raise, and care for so that they could stay together. Step up to the plate and take the necessary steps to banish this policy. I have another letter. This is actually from a married couple with 3 kids, written by the husband. If you find something offensive here, I apologize. I did not write the letter, but there are some very, very good parts in here that I think it's really important that I share with all of you here today. First off, let me state that I can't believe in 2009 someone would have to write a letter concerning equal rights. How can it be left up to county government to decide if it is right for same-sex couples to adopt a child? Does the couple being same-sex make them less of people, less able to care for a child? Are we back in the Rosa Parks era? Is a black person less suitable to adopt a child, or maybe even a Jewish person? Wouldn't that be considered prejudiced? Yes, it would. So doesn't the same go for same-sex couples adopting a child? A child who came from a heterosexual couple that was either unable or unsuitable to care for the child in the very beginning. Shouldn't you, as government officials, be more concerned about the well-being of the child? With our foster homes and orphanages overpopulated already, be grateful that you have couples willing to take on the task of trying to give these kids a loving, stable home, regardless of their preferences. How many children are there now in Butler County with a mom and dad that are neglected, sexually abused, physically abused, or mentally abused? How many have mom and dads that are hooked on crack, alcohol, or are in jail, or just deadbeats? And you say these are the ones best suited to adopt unwanted children. Just because you have a stereotypical mom and dad doesn't make them the best candidate for adoption. Let's be honest here. Shouldn't the decision be based on what is best for the child? Do they have a stable job? Do they have criminal records? Are they financially able to care for the child? Are they able to meet the child's needs? Ask yourself this. If you were parenting and something were to happen to you and your spouse and your child had nowhere to go but into the system, who would you want to take care of your child? Would you want it to stay in a different foster home every year until they turned 18, never knowing what a stable home life was? Or be in an ideal family, as you say it should be, and end up like Marcus Faisal? He had the perfect mom-dad setting. I am a married father of three, and my wife and I have discussed this and looked at it from every angle. We have asked ourselves the same question I just asked you, and our answer was, we didn't care what the sexual preference was of the person or people that would be caring for our children, as long as our kids were taken care of, loved, and treated as people. We know several same-sex couples, as well as your traditional couples, and to be honest here, there are a couple of same-sex couples that I would rather say take care of my kids over some of the traditional couples because we know who they are as people. That's what makes this law so ridiculous. You want to base it all on sexual preference and not on who they are as people. With all the other issues our county needs to address, we are wasting time on this. What's next? Same-sex couples sitting at the back of the bus? Same-sex couples no longer can vote? Same-sex couples have to live on a certain side of town? We have fought so many years for every American to be equal, regardless of color, sex, religion, and everything else that makes us different. I can't believe that this is even an issue. It's time our county governments get off their high horses and get to the 21st century and look what's best for our kids, not their own personal beliefs. John and Wendy Kramer of Hamilton, Ohio. Like I said, I've not met this man or his wife. This lady and her kids I met through the collecting of the names on my petition. As I said again, my name is Carla Britton. I am not a foster parent. I am not seeking to adopt. I am here because the system is making it very difficult for some people to adopt, and because all of these kids deserve good, safe, loving homes. I'm here because I see, and you see every day, single parent families thriving. And while gay parents raise children all over this county, let us not forget that these kids came into our system from heterosexual families. I am here because I read the paper and heard about the two-year-old little girl at the center of all of this controversy who may never get a sibling because her fathers are gay. My question to Mr. Fox, who isn't here, and to you as well as you review this new policy, now that her adoption is final, how can we deny this baby a sibling? How can denying this baby a sibling possibly be in her best interest? Do we wash our hands of this child now, or do we continue what we have started, building her a family? And finally, I am here because once again, Mr. Fox is wrong. And once again, something he has touched smells bad. Let us wash our hands and move forward to this common goal. Let's build families, not obstacle courses. Sometimes we let what we've been told to believe hold us to old ways of seeing the truth. When we do, we end up doing what's expected of us instead of doing what's right. Of all the things that have been talked about here today, I can assure you that nothing is or will be more important than these children. These children are already living on Plan B. And I'll present you with this. I'm going to give you copies of the letters and copies of all of this. And I know that you support not going with the new policy. I'd like to request your autograph on my petition.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Any questions for me? These are not all from Butler County. They started that way, and people became so outraged that I began to accept signatures from other places, but a vast majority of them are from Butler County.
Thanks, Carl. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Carl. Very good presentation.
Thank you.
So, anyone else like to address the commission at this time? Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen, for allowing me to have this opportunity. My name is Sandy Beckett. I live in Hamilton. I am an unemployed person since the middle of October. Had a very good job. And I did want to speak about the workforce. I am in that program right now and going through the WEA program, and I do find it to be very good for myself and a lot of other people. So I am very supportive of that. My issue here is concerning the food stamp program. Regardless of the things that reading in the paper, I fall through the cracks along with an awful lot of other people. So I'm not here just because of myself. I do not meet those guidelines. That is a fact. So I'm not asking that to be turned for me. I have an income of $1,136 a month, which breaks down to $284 a week. If you divide that by 40 hours, that's $7.10. By the time I would pay $700 for my rent, $315 for a car payment, which I have to have going back and forth to work, which I had when I was working, and $120 for my car insurance, sir, I have $1 left out of that $1,136. That's to buy food, gas, anything personal. So that's not happening. So I had to downsize and move with someone else. I had to give up my apartment, paying them that money so that that all includes my utilities and everything for that $700. Still have that car payment, still have that debt. I'd love to be able to have a job this week, and I've been looking since the middle of October. The food stamp program guidelines for a single person, so without any children, is $1,027 for your income, and there are things taken into consideration. By those guidelines, I'm $109 over, even though I just have a dollar left from there. Now, I'm wanting to talk to you today because when you go to see about assistance for food stamps, they're saying, well, we can't help you, but go to the churches. Go to the food pantries. Passing that buck. Sir, gentlemen, I don't know if any of you have been to a food pantry or visited one of those in the county. 3 weeks ago, I did do that. And I was given a bag of groceries that had 11 canned goods, 8 of those were expired dates, a bag of Archway cookies that was dated back from October of 08, 2 hamburger patties, which I'm assuming that's what they were, it was not dated what they were that was in it, freezer burnt. I threw them away, I will tell you that I did, because I would not have given those to someone to eat. This was to be a month's supply of food for me, plus 3, I think they were Meals on Wheels. They were not dated either. To go to a food pantry, and we're sending our people there from an overflow, food pantries are also used by people who receive food stamps. And they're going to the food pantries to get other food. I have a suggestion, which I feel that there are too many food pantries. So people are going to them and they're using them up, and people that really do need them are not getting that opportunity. I feel that if we condense them and put them into maybe just 2 large food pantries within each city, whether it's Monroe or it's Trenton, whatever, but especially like right here in Hamilton. And the churches are being overwhelmed with people asking for money, asking for food, asking for clothes. If they would take their foods to a particular spot and have one on one side of town, one on the other, and one day that's open for people to be able to go. Because you're given a list when you go to the downstairs, or whatever floor this is on. At Job and Family Services, they're saying, we cannot help you, but here's a list of food pantries. And some of those aren't even in anymore. They can't keep the food. The food pantries are hurting. I am not presently working, but I am telling you I would volunteer on a program, regardless if you're saying, Sandy, I'd like you to go and just make sure the food's not undated. I don't think it's good for us to send people to a food pantry and the foods are not what they should be. I don't think, sir, that anyone here would want to receive two hamburger patties and that's supposed to do you for the month. I also need toilet paper, I need paper towels, I need soap, just like everybody else. And this program might not affect me, but it will pilgrim the way for other people who need this that are falling in those cracks. I'm more than willing to go to work and to do whatever it takes to be able to get that, but I don't apply for this program of food stamps. Once again, I fall through that crack. I think those guidelines are too high. I contacted my state representative and that office told me to buy a 5-pound bag of rice. That's what I was told. I also contacted Mr. Kate's office. That was Mr. Boehner's office that I contacted and was told by one of the aides there that answered the phone for me. Buy a 5-pound bag of rice. That is not the answer. That is not what I was looking for, obviously. And that's not what I feel that this county represents. I sit here this morning and heard how well we're doing with our roadways, how well we're doing with our workforce programs, how we are number one in what it is that we go after. And there's a lot of people right out here on this street right now that don't have any food. I should feel very fortunate that I have someone that I can be with and that I can share their food. But there's a lot of people out there that can't. And I'm here to represent them because they don't even know they can come to talk to you. I talked to this wonderful man this week a couple days ago, Mr. Williams. He was very nice to me. He listened to what I had to say. And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to say what I did.
Well, thank you, Sandy. And I'm just curious with the food pantry. Did you happen to go back to that food pantry to inform them of the expiration dates? And did they address that?
I did not go back to them. No, sir, I did not. But because I saw other people that were there. I didn't know till I got back home, and I'm like, oh, this 11 cans, and I had to disperse of 8 of those cans. I don't think that we should be sending people when they're coming here and saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you, go to the food pantry. And in actuality, there is another one, and I haven't given the name of that unless you ask me. But I know about a year ago, and I was on sick leave last summer, and I went to and where I was referred to from downstairs where to go to, which a lot of people do, and we're waiting in line, and is less than a couple blocks from here, and was said, here, I said, what is that? And they said that it was in a bag, not marked, not dated, and it was deer meat. I have never ate deer meat, not saying I'm not good enough to do that, but you know what, I don't think that's right. If I were to go to a food pantry and come back here and put up on your pedestal here or your countertop, something from a food pantry. I mean, I think you need to check into the food pantries. And I think that they need to be one, and I think there needs to be people who, it would take a lot of relief off of the churches if they didn't have to come in. They're volunteering, these are great people who are volunteering, trying to do something, their congregations bringing food in. But you know what? I don't like this can of beets, so I think I'll give it to those people that really need it. Well, you know, and I don't like rice either. But if you're hungry enough, you're going to eat it. But don't force that upon me when you're allowing other people who some are not paying taxes and never have, that are getting food stamps from here, and taking them out and selling them to other people, and then they're going and replenishing themselves at the food pantries. It's a never endless headache cycle, and I would definitely volunteer on a program to help do something about this, and I'm telling you that I would.
Do you know Tina Oso?
I do not know of her, but I highly think that she's a very respectable person and has done a lot in the community and tries to do a lot. They're distributing a lot of that food to the food pantries, but once again, it's being abused, and that needs to be stopped.
You might want to talk with her, and I'm sure she would welcome any kind of assistance or help that you could give, but she does an outstanding job.
Yes, sir.
With what she has to do with, and
We'll make a copy of this transcript for her so she can see what you've said also.
Very good. I do appreciate it. Once again, I feel that the food and the food pantries is a very good thing. They're giving the food, but I feel that it's going out to people who are abusing it, even selling it. But some of the things that are being given should not be given, and the people that are issuing them out, they need to check the dates on these. I don't think you should be giving out meat that is not marked. Or just say, here, you have this. And by the way, you know, I might look really healthy and on the pleasingly plump side, but I'm here to tell you, 11 canned goods doesn't cut it for me. It just doesn't. And two hamburger patties, even if they were dated and they were saying this, that is a not sufficient amount of food for 1 month when a single person is given up to $176 per month to be able to go to the grocery store and pick out what they would like to have. So if these pools, if they would pool them together, and somehow you would suggest that they pool the food pantries together and making them larger and limiting them on coming back a couple times. Some of them do have limitations. Some do not. No, I did not go there, and I probably should have went back and said something, but I'm like, I'm being referred from the county to go to there. And obviously then supposedly they know what's supposed to be going on, so that's why I'm here today for that. And also that the guidelines need to know that it's federally funded, state distributed for food stamps. That is not sufficient enough, as I told you what my unemployment amount happens to be. How am I supposed to continue to be able to do something? I can't pay any of the credit cards I had while I was working. That's not a priority. I need to put gas in my car. I need to put food in my belly. I need to be able to have toilet articles. I want to feel like a human being like all of you do. And I used to. Coincidentally, for 15 years, I managed and operated a temporary agency helping people find jobs, and now I can't find one for myself. But I am not going to let my self-esteem go down the toilet and allow anybody else to do it. And this is the way, by getting up and coming in here this morning and speaking to you gentlemen.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just a couple things. Have you checked with the workforce?
I am involved in the program with the workforce, so okay. I went and took a test this week.
And who sent you to the, was it Job and Family Services? Have you talked to them at all?
I went to Job and Family Services when I first was on unemployment and received food stamps for the month. And that was all I was allotted. They said, we don't want you to have something that you're not supposed to because you go over. I said, okay, that's fine. I'm not here to say change it for Sandy Beckett, but there's a lot of hungry people out there, just like myself. I'm going to be 56 years old. That's the other thing. You know, do you really want to hire somebody 56 years old? Well, knowing what I know now and knowing that you gather that experience with the age, and that makes and sweetens the pot. But a lot of times I'm like, well, you're too old. I don't want this or that. I'll deal with those things, but I'll be able to find a job somehow, some way. But I do think that the program is very good. They will set you up if you, I just took a test this week, and I will find out on Monday if I pass that test. If not, you have an opportunity to take it again. And they do set you up with some schooling. I'm going to probably have to go a different direction. And I have been in sales for over 35 years. And I will probably have to take some sort of computer training, medical coding. I find that exciting avenue to go down. But to change in midstream and not have the experience and start out at entry level, you have to start somewhere. And some of the best advice from somebody that I got, I don't know why, but I'm going to just say it. I worked on a lot of fundraising things, but one of the most honored things that I worked on for fundraising was this past fall for Mr. Nexall. And he was a great guy. And I know that if he was here and I was sitting there eating breakfast with him on a Saturday morning like I used to, before I'd go into work, he would have probably had something to do with this food program, even though he backed a lot of the things because of the children. But he's been very much an inspiration for me to even come in here.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Sandy, you're not a veteran, are you?
No, sir. I'm not a veteran, but I have been a past president of the Veterans Organization for the Ladies Auxiliary, and I am a member of a VFW organization now.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you. Carla, you want to get this photograph before you forget it? That's fine. We're going to go into the regular agenda. You're welcome to stay if you like, or if you...
Actually, thank you for that, but I have appointments I need to attend to. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, separate resolutions. We have 5 change orders for cleaning up the construction on the Board of Elections building. We will, we can vote on these, all 5 of them together, if you don't mind. First is a change order to Silverhawk Construction, $215 to relocate a transformer pad due to reinstallation of electrical conduit and incorrect installation by the Phase 2 contractor. This change order to the benefit of Silverhawk will be deducted from the Phase 2 contractor. Next, we have a change order for $516.98 for the Phase 1 contractor, Silverhawk, to build a ramp for the Phase 2 contractor to deliver materials into the pad and inside building. Although this is change order in favor of Silverhawk Phase 1, it will be deducted from the Phase 2 contractor. Next, we have another change order for Silverhawk, $4,894.51. Silverhawk corrected the installation of the outflow to the manhole due to the fact that the phase two contractor installed it originally at the wrong depth. Although this change order is in favor of Silverhawk, it will be deducted from the phase two contractor. Next, we have a change order to Rapier Electric. This is for $5,222.71. This is the cost to supply cord reels to the construction build-out of the IT area at Board of Elections. Finally, we have a change order for Progressive Plumbing in the amount of $4,101, but after deduction, it will only cost the county $2,050. This change order is claimed by Progressive Plumbing to reconfigure the downspouts due to lack of detail and sufficient on the drawing and difference of opinion. The combined change order, the total change order, $6,152, was split three ways. The contractor absorbed a third, the architect absorbed a third, and the county absorbed a third. So those are separate resolutions. Have a motion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Mr. Dixon would have abstained. As we move on to travel and training, first is from Bob Roberts, Prosecutor's Office, $1,200, eminent domain training, Cleveland, Ohio, April 2nd to April 3rd. Next, James Fantiti, Prosecutor's Office, the OPAA Spring Seminar, $800, Columbus, Ohio, March 19. Next, Jason Owens, Butler County Sheriff's Office, NADDI Basic Diversion Training, $124, Columbus, Ohio, April 5 to 8. Next, Marianne Pressman, attorney for the Sheriff's Office, District 1 Annual Meeting for CLE Seminar, legal, $92, Columbus, Ohio, April 2nd. Next, Marianne Pressman again for legal training, $136, Cincinnati, Ohio, April 2nd. Next, for Roger Gates, Prosecutor's Office, the OSBA Civil Training, $1,000, Cleveland, Ohio, May 13, 14. Next, James Manley, Juvenile Court, Adolescent Substance Abuse Training, $213, Columbus, Ohio, April 23rd and 24th. Next, Jim Monk, Prosecutor's Office, Juvenile Law Symposium, $700, Columbus, Ohio, April 3rd to May 5th. Next, Ben Manning, 12th District Court, the Ohio Association for Court Administration Spring Conference, training, $685, Columbus, May 13 and 14. Next, Kathy Smith and Kathy Beard from Butler County Care Facility, Strategies Resolving Conflict Training, $170, Cincinnati, Ohio, April 2nd. As we move on to the finance and transfers, we have 13 items on the list. I've passed out a sheet before the meeting that you have there. First is an increase in appropriation of $13,334 into the General Fund Sheriff's Department to correct, and then a following transfer between accounts, actually transfer between funds, to make a prior year correction per the state auditor. Next, in a real estate assessment fund, an increase of $35,000 for unemployment cost. Next, in motor vehicle fund, $1,250, a transfer of $99,210 between accounts because the salary was budgeted in the wrong account. Next, under prosecutor's VOCA, fund 1361, a $1,399 transfer between account to reverse a prior resolution. Next, fund 1590, dog and kennel fund, an increase of $42 in budget to take care of a payment to Ohio State University. Next is a $2,400 transfer between accounts to reclass budget originally put in the incorrect account. Number six, sewer fund, $3,500. We have a transfer between accounts for unemployment comp. Next, number seven, water fund, $4,100, transfer between accounts for unemployment purposes. Next, number eight, $5,000, an increase in budget into the Water Replacement and Improvement Fund, 4120, for the capitalization of labor. Number nine, this is a decrease in budget to transfer certain budget items to the food service fund, and then a increase in budget of the first was a decrease in budget of $75,000. This is an increase of budget of $2,165 into the Board of Health Fund $6,000 for unemployment costs. Then in the food service fund, an increase of $75,000 for the change from the Board of Health Fund $6,000 to Fund $6,001. Number 11, the home mobile home inspection, an increase of $110 for additional cost in the budget. Next, Homeland Security Grant 6025, number 12 on your list, transfer of $142 between accounts in order to equal out the PRS account. Finally, item number 13, Solid Waste Fund 6175. This is a transfer between accounts to enable payment of unemployment. As we move on to personnel, we have 9 personnel items to consider today. First is a probationary step increase for Becky Wade, collective bargaining member, Job and Family Services, to $19.18, a 3.9% increase effective March 14th. Next, an annual step increase for Amy Howard, collective bargaining member, Job and Family Services, to $17 per hour, a 3.4% effective March 14th. Next, a step increase for Arlene Rader, collective bargaining member in Job and Family Services, an increase to $15.49, a 3% change effective March 28th. Next, an increase, step increase for Megan Smith, collecting bargaining unit member in Job and Family Services, to $16.63, a 3.2% change effective March 28th. Next, a step increase to Cherish Ball, collective bargaining unit member in Job and Family Services, to $16.63, a 3.2% change effective March 28th. Next, a longevity pay increase for Kathy Miller, collective bargaining unit member, Job and Family Services, $24.01, a 0.3% change. Next, you're requested to approve the hiring of Ashley Crete for part-time social workers for and children's services. You're also requested to approve the hiring of Sam Hopkins as social services worker 3 and children's services. And finally, you're asked to accept and place on file the care facility personnel actions. As we move on to Job and Family Services and Children's Services, we have 13 resolutions to consider today. First is to approve for submission and filing of the PRC plan, the Prevention, Retention, and Contingency Plan, effective April 1, 2009, pursuant to Chapter 5108 of the Ohio Revised Codes. The plan basically lists the procedures and policies of PRC and how they're administered and handled. Next, we have a new contract for a child care contract, child time child care, period April 109 to March 31, 2010, $5,200. Next, we have a new contract, a child care contract with Faith Community Missionary Church, April 1 to March 31, 2010. $6,600. Next, we have a new contract for Ross Country Daycare in the amount of $168,300, period April 1 to March 31, 2010. Next, we have a new contract for child care to Knowledge Learning Corporation, April 1 to March 31, 2010, in the amount of $343,400. Next, we have the First Amendment to a child care contract with ABC Learning for an additional amount of $160,000. Next, we have a First Amendment for a child care contract with GO and WL Inc. Doing business as Youthland Academy in the amount of $150,000. Next, we have a First Amendment to child care contract to Kinder Care Learning Center for an additional amount of $250,000. Next, we have a new contract with Lifespan to provide a Take Care program for April 109 to March 31, 09. The Take Care program involves in-home training of caregivers in order for the participants who's being trained to care for their own family and dependents to migrate to become a caregiver themselves in full employment. This program also provides nurses, nursing assistant assessments to the children that or family members, you know, that are involved with that particular family. Next, we have a First Amendment to a contract with Lifespan. This is a provision for co-pay repository services. This is an increase of $9,591, basically to extend the contract 3 months to June 30th, 2009. Next, we have to request approve an amendment to the Children's Services contract with Sojourner Recovery Services for a modification in the contract terms to expand to the substance abuse treatment that's currently provided to include suboxone treatment and also payment for basic urine screens and advanced urine screens. Next, you're asked to ratify a Children's Services agreement that started February 108 and goes on to June 30th, 09. This is for placement services with the Fairfield Academy. And the total amount of the contract is $426,540. Next, you're requested to approve a new contract with Addis Board for medical match services, the period January 109 to December 3109, in the amount of $40,000. This particular program helps identify candidates for Medicaid eligible assistance and creates a conduit to file for those Medicaid assistance. Next, under Water and Sewer. Water and Sewer has 10 resolutions for you to consider today. The first is execute a contract with Household Hazardous Waste Collection Services at a rate of $32.50 per car for the annual and ongoing household hazardous waste collection. Next, you're asked to approve and execute agreement with GT Environmental for surveying the 2009 annual report and solid waste management plan and a cost of $23,350. Next, you're requested to adopt, approve and adopt the revised and formalized procedures and policies as the Water and Sewer Department combine various policies together into one procedural manual. Next, Water and Sewer requests you to release a performance bond for the extension of public water sewer or public sewer lines to AutoZone. Next, they ask you to rescind resolution 0903-0490 for the release of a one-year maintenance bond to Trails of Four Bridges. They ask you to rescind resolution 0903-0491 to Four Bridges for the same reason. Next, they ask you to release a one-year maintenance bond for water and sewer line extensions to Bridgewater Falls, Phase 1A. Also request a release of a maintenance bond for water and sewer to Bridgewater Falls, Phase 1B. Ask you to release a one-year maintenance bond for public sewer line extension to Trails of Shaker Run, Phase 6. Ask for you to release the maintenance bond for public sewer extension to Trails of Shaker Run, Phase 7. As we move on to the engineer today, the engineer has 14 items for you to consider. First is to award contract 20092 for Beckett Road improvement to Senesis Construction, amount $1,376,594. Next is to receive and refer bids for the Liberty Township sidewalk along Dutchland Parkway, one of the items detailed in Greg's Capital Improvement Fund. Low bid, WG Stang at $36,945. The high bid, LW DeWeese Company at $54,380. Next, the engineer asked you to receive and refer bids for the bulk sodium chloride contract or salt contracts that we're talking about as far as a regionalization approach. The low bid is from a North American Salt Company. At $65.01 per piler or $62.01 per dump. The high bid was Morton Salt at ranging from $99.45 to $99.51 per piler and $96.45 and $96.51 per dump. The engineer also requests you to receive and refer bids for the Somerville Road Road Bridge Improvement Contract. The low bid, Brumbach Construction, $474,922. The high bid, W.G. Stang, at $662,641. The engineer also asked you to receive and refer bids for the Howard Bridge Road replacement. Low bid, W.G. Stang, $215,369. High bid, R.B. Juergens,